Welcome back to another episode of Books Closed. This episode is sponsored by Tatsoul. You'll find me here this week much like you found me back in episode number 4. I'm at my home in my office room studio that once served as the set for episode 2's Hip or Shit game with Todd Noble. But today, there are no games being played. I'm all alone. But don't cry for me just yet, because it's time that I finally start digging through the show's voicemail box.
Hello, my name's Danny. I'm a tattooer in Kansas City, Missouri. I love your show, and thought I would call in about something I've been thinking about with regards to the internet and tattooing, mainly where kind of internet call-out culture and tattooing collide. Basically, tattooers who have been accused of sexual misconduct towards women or inappropriate and sometimes even dangerous behavior. I see the internet as a good tool to put the word out there about harmful people, but on the other hand, it seems like there are, almost tattooers who are using the crimes of others to leverage their own internet visibility. I just thought maybe you might want to weigh in on that or would like to hear your thoughts. Anyways, keep up the good work. Your show is awesome. It's been really cool to hear some awesome tattooers weigh in on some things that make me feel kind of insane day to day and realize it's not so big of a deal. So thanks. And your tattoos are cool too. Have a good one. Bye.
Thank you very much for that call, Danny. This is a very sensitive topic, and it's the sort of thing I would typically shy away from for this show. I always want people to come away from listening to the show feeling inspired and able to carry some bits of the guest's wisdom with them. But just because your question, Danny, brings up a topic that is hard to discuss doesn't mean it should be glossed over. Call-out culture, to me, is a double-edged sword. We can now, as a community, quickly spread warnings about the wrongdoing of people to protect others that could be affected by them. This is obviously a huge plus. But, on the other side of it, that same momentum that builds in those situations can grow just as fast when the general public truly doesn't have all or any of the information. I've seen instances of people's reactions being way gnarlier and more inappropriate than the action they were speaking out against. The subject of sexual assault and tattooing has been discussed probably as heavily as ever within the past year. We've seen at least a couple very alarming stories of sexual misconduct and violence coming from male tattooers. Many of you listening are probably familiar with some of these stories, as they were hugely talked about amongst the tattoo community online. It is rare that anyone gets a satisfying resolution as a bystander in these scenarios. There's typically an explosion of posting, sharing, and discussing at first. A lot of people get really freaked out, and then the roar is dulled until it's out of the public eye. It leaves me wondering what happens in these situations. Most of us will probably never know. What I have noticed is an increasing sense of community that can develop around these discussions, and that seems to be a huge step towards positive change. Personally, I find myself avoiding any conversation online about politics or social issues. Like anyone, I've got my opinions, but I think the best role that I can take in most cases is that of someone who's just listening and not adding further to the noise. What I'm trying to say here is that this is a tough topic for me to offer useful insight worthy of your time. So I am going to call someone who doesn't just talk about change, but really is working hard to push the boulder up the hill. Hello?
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. I called Ashley Love, a talented tattooer from Salt Lake City, Utah. For the past few years, she has been working on a project that promotes awareness, prevention, and recovery from sexual violence. Where are you right now?
I'm actually in the drawing room of the tattoo shop of Yellow Rose because I get no phone reception in my house.
At all?
Yep, none.
How do you even live?
I don't really mind it, actually.
Yeah, I guess it's a nice escape from it all when your day is over or starting.
Yeah.
So how long have you been in Salt Lake City?
It has been about 2.5 years now. It's great. It's really beautiful. I like the small town vibe.
Yeah, where did you work before you were in Salt Lake City?
I was in New York City for about 5 years. The last year of New York, I had a private studio and also worked at Greenpoint Tattoo. And the 2 years previous to that, I was at New York Adorn.
Where did you grow up?
I'm from North Carolina, a small city called, well, a small town called Winston-Salem that you've probably never heard of, but...
I think I have, actually.
Oh, really? We've got Wake Forest basketball. We make Hanes t-shirts. A lot of tobacco fields are there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and Texas Pete is manufactured in Winston-Salem, North Carolina.
So it's a pretty happening place.
It's pretty wild.
Is that where you started tattooing originally?
I actually learned to tattoo in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Had to go to the big city?
Yeah.
Have you always had a traditional sensibility in your work since the beginning?
Yeah, definitely since day one. You know, along the way it's changed, but yeah.
I feel like I've been familiar with your work for as long as I've been tattooing.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
I think you were pretty Tumblr famous, which is probably where I saw your stuff.
Mm-hmm. Did have a Tumblr.
Yeah. Yeah. Your work always stuck out. And I think that, I don't know, I feel like I just saw a lot of it back then. So you've always been a person whose work I've followed all along. So it's cool to finally get to talk to you a little bit today.
Cool. That's awesome. Thank you.
The main thing I wanted to talk about is you are still not asking for it. I don't know if you'd call it an event or a project, or how would you describe it?
Call it both of those things, actually. Usually, you know, it started as an event, and this year we're actually adding on an art auction, which will take place in October. So at this point, it seems a little bit easier to call it a project since it's multifaceted now.
So for the listeners, if they're not familiar with it, what is the focus of this project?
The focus is to kind of introduce the conversation of sexual violence to the tattoo community and kind of open up a dialogue so that we can shine some light on it. It definitely exists in this community a lot, and I think it's often ignored or dismissed, and I don't think that's all right. So kind of is a way for me to point it out, and also to call on allies to show their faces and kind of encourage them to take a stand, even if it's only for a day, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's indicative of something much bigger that's happening in our society, or at least in this country, in the past couple of years. It's no surprise that it's trickling down into smaller subcultures and communities and stuff.
I agree.
So what was your original motivation for starting this?
I began it because of the reaction that I experienced while after being sexually assaulted by a colleague of mine, who I actually considered to be one of my best friends. And so the aftermath dealing with that was hard enough as it was. But during all of that, I also saw that a lot of my friends were fair weather friends, you know. They wanted to give me verbal support and technically be on my side, but they also wanted to go out and party with him at night. And I thought that was really messed up. And I don't think that that's how these situations should happen at all. I don't think that the victim or survivor should be made to feel like their issues aren't real or important. And I don't think that they should be made to feel like their friends are fake. You know, I'd rather have 2 real friends than 100 fake friends.
Why do you think it goes? I mean, this is a much larger and more broad question, but why do you think that sexual assault is treated this way?
Man, I think there's a ton of reasons. I think that right now in society, it's actually a little bit confusing. Men don't know what they're allowed and not allowed to do. And I think they are actually scared that they might get called out for something they didn't know was sexual assault. So I think that kind of puts them in a position to not really want to take a side because they might find themselves in the spotlight sooner than they know it, which I mean, I would hope if they do come to find themselves being called out for something they didn't realize was wrong, I would hope that that would not be a terrible event and it could be done in a nice way. You know, I don't think that anyone who's sincerely making a mistake should be shunned. I also think that good times go a long way. You know, people don't want to lose their friends. They want to go out and party. They want to hang out with the fun guys, and I get it. I also think that there is a way to do that and be on the right side of things. If you find one of your friends being called out for something very serious, the right way to handle that is to be an actual friend, help them get help, help them deal with the issue and get past it. It's not like you're doomed forever and you're just all of a sudden an evil person on this planet for the rest of your life. You know, like, if you deal with these situations correctly, I don't think anyone needs to necessarily be labeled bad guy forever.
I think if more people shared that attitude of trying to just trying to learn and trying to overcome what maybe some people have considered social norms in the past, and now we're all, as a larger community, starting to agree that the norms aren't quite acceptable anymore. I think the attitude that you're describing would definitely help a lot more people make progress on both sides of the coin, for sure.
Yeah, I agree. And I hope that with speaking my voice, that I can be a small part of that idea spreading.
Well, I think you're being a pretty big part of it, because you just had an event with a lot of tattoo shops involved.
Yeah, I think there were 52. On June 10th, everybody, I think they were all flash events. That's the main, you know, that's how we do it. So that's what we encouraged. Every shop runs different, and some of the shops were smaller, so they weren't necessarily as, like, accommodating for walk-ins. But, yeah, everyone drew up a bunch of designs and invited their community to come and support. And every penny raised at those events was donated to either a local or national organization which supports survivors and advocates for change in our society.
How much money was raised in that day?
Oh, man. I think it was $267,000.
Whoa.
It was over $250,000.
That's amazing.
That's $250,000.
Yeah, that's a lot of dough.
Yeah, I was really excited about that.
Yeah, that's got to feel really good after, I'm sure, putting a shitload of effort into coordinating that.
It was pretty consuming for sure, and it definitely felt like the appropriate reward. It was really awesome. And, I mean, for me, on June 9th, it started in Australia. So I got to watch it starting on social media and, you know, watch people's stories, and it was really fun.
So how did, in the planning stages of that event, how do you go about coordinating such a large thing?
Well, that's a good question. I assume it'll probably change a little bit as we go. And when I say we, I'm usually referring to myself and my best friend, Jessica, who now lives in San Diego and owns a restaurant. She helps me kind of coordinate things behind the scenes. But this is the first time that we've ever hosted a Still Not Asking For It event without physically being there.
Mm-hmm. It's got to be a little scary to let go of control a little bit.
It was terrifying. But we agreed that it was kind of necessary. You know, we had the opportunity for it to grow so much, and if we weren't willing to let it grow, that would be a shame. So we definitely winged it, and it went really well. But basically, we sent out, man, I think 3 to 4 way long emails, which I believe most people read. And so the first one was an invite and a rundown of how we do things and how we want things, the things we actually care about maintaining throughout all shops and blah, blah, blah. If they responded to that, then we continued to touch base. And we just went a little bit further in depth. In the second one, I can't really remember the specifics, but we also suggested to everyone in America that they donate to the Joyful Heart Foundation if they couldn't find a local organization, because we've worked with the Joyful Heart a lot, and they do a whole bunch of work. They're super active, and so we know the money is going to a good place. We also sent out an email within the week before the event, kind of just sharing our opinions about the vibe that's going to be had in the shop, because a lot of people probably had no idea what to expect happening in their shop that day. And just, you know, reminded everyone to have a positive yet aware state of mind, because many of these people coming in to support are recovering. And that was something that was actually really important to us, was, you know, if we wanted the events to be fun for everyone, for the shop, for the client, but mainly we wanted all of the tattooers to remain aware of what was going on, not to make any dumb jokes or be insensitive to anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like that could end up being a pretty heavy day for a tattooer, with the kind of clientele that they might encounter. just one after another with people with, you know, very personal experiences they're dealing with, and it might be, you know, overly emotional, which is, you know, we deal with that as tattooers all the time, but to do 20 people in a row that are all feeling equally as heavily emotional, it can probably be pretty wearing.
Yeah, that's true. But you would also be extremely surprised at how freaking positive all of these people are. Every event that I've worked has been definitely exhausting, but you just can't stop smiling afterwards. It's awesome.
I can imagine a lot of people that are attending these events, you know, they may feel like they don't have, maybe not have a support system or a community behind them. And then that day alone can show them that they're part of this community that really does care for each other. And that's why I think this event that you do is so cool.
Thank you. I've noticed the same thing as well. People mentioning that they've met new friends in line, bringing supporters, and just coming alone even and seeing how many other people think the same as them. You know what I mean? To come to one of these events on your own probably means that you're dealing with a lot of things on your own. And to see how packed it gets is probably a really good feeling.
And it's probably one of the few days in a tattoo shop anywhere that people don't complain about having to wait, because it might actually be a good experience for them.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's a nice change too for everybody.
Yeah.
So since you've started really voicing your views and working on these events and putting yourself out there in this new way, have you noticed a shift in your clientele?
I have. I would definitely say that a lot of it is due to the event. It's kind of a difficult thing to analyze because we hosted the first Still Not Asking For It event in October of 2015, and I moved here in December of 2015. So my clientele has changed tremendously from when I lived in New York. And I think it's probably a combination of where I am and also the event. But I mean, for sure, the things that people talk to me about while I'm tattooing them, I wouldn't imagine them mentioning to someone other than me, unless, you know, they were also hosting a Still Not Asking For It event.
Right. And I want to point out that I'm not asking that question to try to suggest that you're using it as a gimmick for business or anything.
Oh, I didn't think that at all.
I didn't think you did, but just for anyone listening out there, I'm not trying to like make a weird, provocative, hard-hitting interview here. As far as how you've been affected personally, as far as your own healing or your own, you know, anything, what have you experienced since doing all this? Because I know that with all projects that I take on, I feel a tremendous amount of pride and accomplishment after completing something.
Yeah, I definitely feel that every single time we do anything with this project. I would say at this point, man, we've hosted, I think personally, I've been at 8 or 9 events now. And it has initially, I was doing a lot of recovering myself at these events. And it has since transitioned into more so pride. I was always having that, but I was getting a lot more out of it to begin with. And I think now my cup is kind of full. So now I can just give out. Not that I was ever doing it to take, you know, this wasn't meant for my own personal recovery so much as making a statement, but it definitely had a lot of healing power. And now that I don't really feel like I have much healing left to do as far as the tattoo community goes. I know where I stand. I know where other people stand, and I feel like there are changes being made, and I'm just plain happy. So at this point, it's every time we do something, I'm more accomplished, but I'm also more driven. I also have completely forgotten what the question is at this point.
Well, you're answering it perfectly, so.
Okay. But it just gives me, every event I receive a lot of joy. I give a lot of joy. And I just, the next day, I'm already thinking about what to do next.
Yeah. How many steps ahead are you planning? I know you mentioned the art show, but anything else in the works?
That's it right now. And then obviously next summer, we'll have another worldwide event. This stuff is pretty time consuming for me. So
yeah, how much time do you think you put into planning?
Well, it comes in waves. I would say currently with organizing this auction, I'm probably spending 7 really focused hours this week. But then the month or two leading up to the event, I would say it was probably close to a full-time job on top of my job. Between every tattoo, I was in the back on my computer talking with people, touching base with people, doing something else I needed to do. And then I would finish tattooing, go home, get back on the computer. And it was just pretty much tattooing or organizing or sleeping. And that was it.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely can rule your entire life, I'm sure.
Yeah.
This week, we're sponsored by Tatsoul. Find all of their products at tatsoul.com and updates on their Instagram at Tatsoul. I told you last week, but you need to hear it again. They just put out two new colorways of their shop furniture. You can get client chairs, artist chairs, armrests, and portable tables in oxblood and tobacco. I can't tell you how many customers I've lost over the years because they were unimpressed by my shop furniture. It's embarrassing. So now's your chance to move up to the big leagues and start looking like you know what you're doing. Tatsoul is also offering free shipping on all of their furniture to customers in the contiguous United States. See what's doing over at tatsoul.com and make sure to tell them you heard about them on Books Closed. Do you find that it's hard to promote charity events or do any charity work in a world where everyone is seemingly like their own charity, like all these GoFundMes? And I'm talking about the ones that aren't worthwhile necessarily. Or do people know the difference?
I think people really know the difference. I think since it is foundation-based and going to a center that has a faith, here in Salt Lake City, we donate to the Rape Recovery Center of Utah, and our shop works with them a lot, and so they're very much seen around town and here in the shop. So I think the fact that they are so active lets people know that they really do need the money. It's not just going to some dark place that you don't really ever know where it goes afterwards. And I think that is really helpful.
Yeah, it's tough. I feel like everyone is begging for money online for good and bad reasons. But I think having such a unique voice, especially within tattooing, it probably isn't too hard to stand out doing what you're doing.
So far, we've had a lot of luck and everyone's really open to paying attention to what we're doing and why, and open to supporting as well. We also have a bunch of small businesses in town that always offer to help out and donate food for the tattooers. And we always have raffles with tons of gifts from local businesses. Everyone gets really excited about it here.
I feel like it can be hard sometimes to work with businesses, and it's not that most people aren't in agreement with what your purpose is, but I feel like just in general, a lot of when it comes to business, people shy away from putting out any sort of personal views or opinions or strong statements or anything. Have you experienced trouble working with people who are, you know, they would love to do it, but it's kind of scary to put yourself out there in a personal way from the voice of your business?
I remember when we were setting up the first event in New York, Jessica was handling most of the donations and coordination with that. And she mentioned to me that she works in the restaurant business, and so she has a lot of connections, and she would reach out to people and say, hey, we're putting on this fundraiser, we want you to be involved somehow, could you do this or that, blah blah blah. Everyone was way stoked, and then she would send them more information about the event. As soon as the word rape was used, we'd never hear back.
It's a scary word.
It is. It's also, it's to me, it's a scary word not to have an opinion on, but that's just me.
Right.
So we do experience it a little bit. It's a little bit hard for me to step outside and see it at this point outside of what I'm experiencing here in Salt Lake City, because this event was the third year here. And I think because of how seriously we take it here at the tattoo shop, how many people we know in our community, at this point, people are reaching out to us. So we no longer have to ask anyone for anything, and we don't have to hear them shy away from it.
And I feel like in more developed cities, it's probably easier to do stuff like this. But I can imagine in a smaller town, it could be a controversial stance to take.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I guess if anything, it's a great testament to leading by example, you know, because you've made such an example of the events in the last few years that it's getting easier and easier for people locally to you to jump on.
Yeah, that's true. And I think it really is spreading the conversation a lot, which is the goal, you know.
all of this is pretty timely, especially in the context of tattooing, because I feel like in the last year there's been some pretty substantial stories of assault by tattooers that have come out and have really, I feel like I've seen people discussing this more than ever. Have you noticed a bigger bump in support for Still Not Asking for It since all of that stuff had happened? Probably, I think, since the end of last year or so.
Definitely. We had a Facebook page for the first few years, and I actually don't really use Facebook, so I'm not sure how many members or followers or whatever we had, but we started our Instagram this year and already have 12,000 followers. I definitely don't think we would have had 12,000 followers 2 years ago, you know?
Yeah.
I think the fact that I do voice my opinion pretty regularly about these things helps to kind of shine a light on my project. I think I have a lot of supporters who also during these events point out this project and tattooing, which is awesome because that's, you know, we're kind of here to be that voice for any of those clients, other tattooers, anything. But yeah, I think the topic is becoming extremely relevant. I mean, it always has been, but it's way more in the spotlight now.
When I had first started the show, I had gotten in touch with you because I wanted to talk to you about all this stuff, but it seemed very pertinent because I started a voicemail line. So people call in and leave me comments and questions and stuff. And I got a very good call, and it was about, you know, pretty much about what we've been talking about so far. And the caller was asking about internet call out culture and tattooing kind of colliding. And they said, while it can be a good tool to spread awareness, obviously, they were curious about how tattooers may use the wrongdoings of others to gain exposure. And again, I'm not suggesting you do this because I think you've proven that that's not the thing. But speaking very generally, and I don't want to call anyone out or you know, what do you think about that as far as people kind of jumping on a bandwagon, maybe not so genuinely?
Yeah, I see the angle for sure. I think, man, that's a really, really huge, intimidating topic for me because, well, I was going to say I know how this can ruin a career, but I also have seen lately that it actually doesn't ruin a career.
But, yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
But besides that, I, you know, it would be terrible for anyone to get accused of something that they simply did not do. That's just terrible on its own. But as far as just having an opinion because it's the cool thing to do right now or it's going to get you some attention, I think that's really unfortunate. And I'm sure it happens. And I don't know, you know, I don't know how you address something like that because, man, if it's helping people in general, does that make it okay? You know what I mean? If it's...
Yeah, that's kind of my question about it. Even if someone is disingenuous, if they're putting out this positive message, mm-hmm. is it really that bad?
Yeah, that's kind of my standpoint too. I'm not sure that I would say it's necessarily bad. I would just say that it's unfortunate. I do think that a lot of times during these events, there are probably tattooers participating who, you know, not every tattooer in the shop feels strongly about any of this, but I do think probably there are tattooers who get involved for whatever, because they happen to work at a shop that's hosting, because they catch on to something and maybe they want to get a little bit of attention for it. All I can think is I hope that being involved in the conversation, hearing the stories that do get told from men and women about abuse, I hope it makes them care more than they did, you know?
Yeah, I guess that's true.
And maybe in the future, it'll be more sincere.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see maybe the intent coming later, but I guess better late than never, honestly, because that's the whole point of the whole thing.
Yeah, definitely. But it is, I mean, I guess that goes into every topic you could have an opinion on, there's always going to be someone who's faking it because they think it's the cool thing to do.
Yeah, it's tough. I've always been bothered by the bandwagon mentality on the internet and how people sometimes will just blindly scream an opinion that they read a sentence about and then they assume it as their own. People just kind of curate stuff online to further their own agenda or whatever it may be. And they'll latch on to certain things. But, you know, like we're just saying, when it comes to spreading the word about dangerous people or things that people should be more aware about, then I become more torn on how I feel about the bandwagon mentality because it can be a very positive or at least helpful thing in a lot of different ways. but it is scary to think that someone can be vilified without all the facts necessarily. And, mm-hmm. and like we've seen in the recent past, usually, you know, when it rains, it pours. So as soon as something comes out, there's usually plenty of other facts and stories to kind of back things up. But I guess yeah. my question to you, through all of this rambling of my own, is mm-hmm. how can we best be assertive but still cautious in these sensitive discussions?
My standpoint right now, the way that I handle myself, I guess, is there are situations that are strongly backed up and undeniable. And for those situations, you know, I think they should become public. For the ones that are kind of more hearsay, there's no written dialogue or video or anything to prove it, then I kind of share some of those stories with my close friends and close colleagues, but that's as far as I can take it. There are laws on slander for a reason, and none of us are any sort of authority. So,
and especially now you've got a even bigger responsibility than a lot of other people, because you've become such a voice, and people, I'm sure, are looking towards you for guidance and stuff in a lot of these cases. So it's almost like you're wielding an ultra power that you've got to be extra careful on that sort of thing, I'm sure.
Yeah, I agree. It's pretty terrifying. And it is really sad sometimes when I get contacted about someone's experiences. And, you know, sometimes I think really all they are looking for is for me to say it, to repeat it. And I really can't, you know, and it doesn't have anything to do with my opinions on the tattooer or my opinions on them as a person. It's really just not something that I have a choice on, because it is too dangerous. And if there's no proof, then it is slander.
It's a sticky situation.
Yeah.
It's tough. And I know that personally, I'm always scared to discuss anything. I mean, we all talk about this stuff at the shop all the time, and I feel mm-hmm. lucky that everyone that I work with, we're all on the same page as far as this stuff. So it is scary online. You almost can't win having a lot of discussions, even if you have the best intentions.
Oh man, yeah. Online discussions are terrifying. I feel like every time I get involved in a serious conversation online, I feel like I'm bound to be attacked in some way. And it's never because I feel like I'm sharing my rude or careless opinions. I feel like I'm a very caring person, and I think there's just no way to be safe online.
Yeah, I agree. And even for you specifically, someone who has like a proven record of compassion and good mm-hmm. intentions, like you still can't win. So it's crazy. And I think that's the root of most communication issues in our entire world, outside of tattooing, outside of everything.
Yeah.
But that's a whole nother podcast. We could talk for weeks about that, I'm sure.
It's true.
So with consideration to all of this, all the time you spend on everything, does it ever feel like it's just too much? Because you basically, like you've already said, you've got multiple full-time jobs at times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say after the event in June, I was pretty worn out. I was really lucky this year because we closed the shop for a few days after that because we were renovating anyway. So after the event, I kind of just was... I disappeared from the world. I didn't keep up with the internet or anything. My partner, Jessica, handled all the back and forth with the shops after the event, which was so insanely helpful. It's a little bit hard to figure out how to stay sane and healthy during that, but I will. And another time is also, I think all of that, one of those crazy internet incidences with tattooers happened the week of Christmas.
Yep.
And I talked to a few of the girls who had terrible experiences with him myself, just because I kind of felt like I had to. But out of that was a really tough week. I felt extremely overwhelmed and just didn't. I mean, I was lucky. I was with my husband's family, so I was having a good time while having a bad time, I guess. You know, it was really, really
Merry heavy. Christmas.
Yeah. It was hard. I was feeling very delicate, but I was with the right people.
That's good. Good and bad timing.
Yeah, exactly.
How would you say that you find balance between your work and your home life? And this includes tattooing and everything too. I don't want to overlook the fact that you're tattooing full time.
That's, I think, just a constant battle, especially now. I've been, ever since living ever since moving to Utah, I've been with my now husband, who is also a tattooer. So, I mean, we go home and we talk about tattoos and we talk about tattoo shops. And I love it because he gets it, but I also hate it.
I always wonder about that because my wife is not a tattooer and she has no tattoos and she appreciates them, but like we're the opposite. So for me, I get to shut it off when I go home. And I always wonder what it's like to go home and your significant other is also a tattooer.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what my opinion is. I think it's really fun sometimes. And I think sometimes it would be nice to be able to turn that off. Which is, it's really hard because as you know, when you're a tattooer, it's on your mind always. So to have two minds that are always thinking about it, it's just, I don't know if there's ever an hour that goes by that it's not mentioned somehow. No, there's no way that that happens, you know?
You gotta like go swim with dolphins or something or skydive. It's the only way where you're like fearing for your well-being.
Yeah, true. But yeah, so I don't know. I haven't figured out the balance thing yet. But that's okay. I think, you know, it's one of those careers where you are doing what you love and it's going to overwhelm your life. And it does push me to get out of town, you know, just get away. Sometimes I feel like I just need to leave and that's fine. That's cool. Cause probably if I didn't have that pushing me to get away, I probably would never leave my house.
Yeah. I can relate to that feeling. I was going to say, it's nice. I wish that I really prefer to do in-person interviews. So I apologize that I'm doing the phone interview with you, but I felt like this was very pertinent to that call I got to the voicemail line. So hopefully I'll get to meet you in person sometime and maybe we can do a further interview because it's always hard to connect the same way over the phone.
It really is. It's so much different.
This has felt pretty good, but in like past phone interviews I've done, I find myself like staring at the wall sometimes and it's just so different.
I know. I'm just staring at my Luna Pigment postcard with all the different colors. Because if I do something else, I'll be too distracted to keep a conversation.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah, I'm here like looking through all my notes and stuff and it's, I don't know. But it is good because I haven't brushed my teeth yet this morning. And the fact that we're doing this over the phone, I'm not self-conscious about it.
Good. I'm glad.
So as far as traveling for work, do you do a lot of guest spots frequently? Or what would you say your travel schedule is like these days?
Lately, I have been traveling more than the previous 2 years. My last year in New York, I was out of town at least once a month. And it would either be one or 2 weeks. So that's a good amount of the year.
Yeah.
And then when I moved here, I really needed to build clientele. Things work a lot different here than New York. And it's also way more expensive for me to travel from here. So I'm definitely traveling less. It's harder to travel when you have a significant other that you want to be with, you know. And we don't always need to go everywhere together. So I'm just now trying to figure all of that out. I just did a guest spot in San Diego, I think last week. And then I'm going to New York in a few weeks from now. And then in October, I'll be going to LA. I've also worked in Montreal, Denver, maybe a couple other places this year. So I'm still doing it. Maybe not as often and not as far as I used to.
Right. But you're still probably getting that more than the average tattooer, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think I get restless and I think I just have to do it, you know?
Yeah, I always feel charged up after getting back from a trip like that. So it's always worth it, even though I know I dread it. The few days before, I always regret planning anything.
Me too.
What is that? What is that rooted in, you think? Are we homebodies or what?
I get so nervous. It's obviously a lot less nerve-wracking if you have worked at the shop you're going to before. But if you haven't, even when you know the tattooers, I'm just really intimidated very easily. And, you know, I don't want to be a fool. I think about that. I don't want to do bad tattoos. I don't want to set something up the wrong way because I should know how to set everything up by now. And, you know, I think for me, a lot of times it's just the simple things, but I still get stressed out before almost every workday. You know, I don't take tattooing that casually. I think it's a very serious job. And so any day of work to me is kind of, it is work. It's fun and I love it, but I can feel it on my shoulders always.
Well, I think any accomplished tattooer must feel the same way because that attitude is reflected in your work. The fact that it's developing and improving all the time. I think if you were comfortable all the time, it would probably just kind of look the same forever. And
yeah, I've always said that the minute that you think you're a good tattooer is the minute you start becoming a bad tattooer.
Yeah, for sure. If other shops or tattooers want to get involved with the future Still Not Asking For It events, how would they go about doing that?
We have an email address, stillnotaskingforitnyc@gmail.com, which is ironic because neither of us live in New York City anymore.
It sounds cooler, though. It sounds slick.
Yeah, it sounds way cooler that way. we also have our website is stillnotaskingforit.gives, and there's a contact page on there. Also, we're pretty okay at checking our DMs on our Instagram, which is stillnotaskingforit_flashevent.
You're not still rocking hard on Tumblr?
I don't do the Tumblr anymore these days.
I don't think many people are, unless they're curating like weird porn animations and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of too scary for me, you know?
Yeah, it's a freaky place over there. It's like the red light district of the internet almost.
It is, exactly.
I really admire when people put the legwork behind their ideas, so thank you, Ashley, for all that you do and for coming on the show to talk about it. You can check out Ashley's work on Instagram at oashleylove, O-H, Ashley Love. If you're in Salt Lake City, you can find her at Yellow Rose Tattoo. And to keep up with the project Still Not Asking For It, check them out on Instagram at stillnotaskingforit_flashevent. If you are a survivor of sexual assault and are seeking resources, there is a National Sexual Assault Hotline that offers free help to anyone. You can either call at 1-800-656-4673 or use their online chat hotline. While working on this episode, I remembered that a friend and former coworker of mine, Jeb Riley, was part of the big Still Not Asking For It event this past June. He works at Redemption Tattoo in Cambridge, Massachusetts. I gave him a quick call to talk about his experience working at a distance with Ashley and what the scene was like for him.
How you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
So I got in touch with her back in December after the big firestorm of allegations was going around Instagram and Facebook and all that stuff, just saying that I wanted to help out. And that's when she told me that she was going to be doing it a little bit different this year. She was going to be doing one event all over the world. So not knowing how it was going to go, we just kind of went into it blindly. It was myself and Andrew, not Andrew Storth, you're Andrew Storth. Myself and Andy Reach, who I work with at Redemption. And we got there a little bit early. We felt like we were prepared, and we were pretty surprised by the outpouring of support. We definitely didn't have time to do every tattoo that we were requested to do that day. It was just the two of us. Not only was it super busy, but it was like a good atmosphere. There was a lot of people hanging out for, I think there were some people hanging out there for 6 hours before they got tattooed. We tattooed from 11 to 11 that day. It was a positive environment. There were some people who told us that they had had bad experiences, or, you know, they had been abused, or, you know, whatever their personal story was. So there was a little bit of that in the air, but all in all, it was a really good, it was a good atmosphere.
Did people seem especially patient while waiting that long?
They were. it was strange. It was almost like before we got the music going, it was like a museum. There were probably 20 people in the shop, which was probably the busiest it's ever been, and it was dead quiet. So everybody was, I think, you know, obviously they knew why they were there, and they were being very patient with us, and so that was nice.
So coming out of that experience, how did you feel like going home after a day like that? What was going through your head?
It felt good. It didn't feel, it wasn't super emotionally heavy, but I guess given the fact that I had just done 11 or 12 hours of tattooing, I didn't feel beaten down. It was the atmosphere at the shop throughout the whole day kind of carried us along. Yeah, I think we each did about 12 tattoos. There were 24 tattoos done total. So it was steady. Weren't any breaks taken. So it was, you know, it was a full heavy day of tattooing, but it flew by.
Was it a set sheet of flash that everyone that did all the events did, or did you guys make your own stuff?
We made a lot of our own stuff. Ashley sent over some designs that had been used in previous events. So we had those up there kind of as the standard. People might have seen them before at other events and they wanted to get those. And we did a handful of those, and we had some other things that we had drawn up particularly for the event. You know, if you saw the design, you probably know that it was there for that event. And then we had some other designs that were just cool tattoos. We figured that a lot of the people who were coming might want to get something associated with the event. Other people just wanted to get cool tattoos and show their support. So we had a good mix of the two. And then one guy who is a loyal client stopped by and just donated $100. He didn't even get tattooed. He just stopped by to drop off some money. So that was nice. It was good to see, I guess, what an effect the thing that Ashley and Jessica had created had nationwide or worldwide, because it's one of the ways that, I guess, social media could be used in a positive way. When there was lots of comments and allegations being made on people, it seemed like we weren't really sure what was going to become of everything. And I think it gave a lot of people a bad taste as far as, you know, comments being made. And the negative side of social media and people ganging up on other people and fingers being pointed. But on the flip side, it's cool that this thing that she created could be used in a positive way to rally people and bring people together. And all we had to do was put a couple notifications up on our accounts that we were going to be taking part in this. And, you know, people came out. They showed up. They asked a lot of questions. And they were thoroughly excited about it. I mean, they didn't try to hide there how stoked they were that we were taking part in it. So that felt good. It felt good to know that we were doing something that was going to benefit the people who needed it. All the money we made went to the Boston Area Rape Crisis Center. As a tattooer, I wanted to help. I wanted to help out, but I didn't know what I could do. And I didn't want to write some comments online, and I didn't want to buy a plane ticket to kick some dude's teeth in. So, you know, the thing I could do was do tattoos and donate the money. So that's what I did.
Would you participate in an event like that again in the future?
I would. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Jeb, you're a class act.
Thanks, Andrew. You too.
All right. Well, it's nice to hear from you. I miss you, pal.
Yeah, you too. I've been thinking about you a lot, actually. Before you texted me, I was going to text you and say, hey, are you ever going to be in the Boston area?
I am.
Cool. Well, when you come on down, let me know if you have.
Thank you, Jeb. Jeb does great tattoos, and you can see them on Instagram at Jeb Riley. This is an episode that was important to make, and the call on my voicemail line really helped me to see that even more. Thank you again, Danny, for your call. You really helped to shape this one. If you listening out there have questions or comments of your own, please do not be a stranger to the voicemail line at 857-444-0662. Before we go, I want to share one more listener call with you.
Hello, Andrew. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Love the show. Wondering if you're going to have any tattooers on there that aren't traditional tattooers. Your Gogues, your Shiges, and whatnot. I mean, I know you had some good traditional Japanese on there. Just curious. Keep it up, and love the show. Thanks.
Thank you for that call. The answer to your question is that there's only one way for you to find the answer. Stay tuned. Thank you again to our sponsor this week, Tatsoul. Follow me on Instagram at Andrew Stortz. And for all show notes, videos, and links, check out booksclosepodcast.com. If you enjoy the show, please share it with your friends. Post about it on your Instagram feed or stories. Put it on your Facebook. Write a letter to the editor of your local newspaper. If that's too much work, just leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. It just takes a second to rate the show with those beautiful 5 stars, and it really helps spreading the word to new listeners. Next week, let's all meet back here, same time, same place.